show is brought to you by the Buddhist Youth Association every Sunday, bringing Buddhism to the community of the Waikato. We also give away a range of free English or Chinese Buddhism books, MP3, or tapes on Buddhism. If you'd like one, please send a letter with $3 worth of stamps in an envelope to P.O. Box 82146, Highland Park, Howick, Auckland. Or you can phone 09271 3377. Buddhist Youth Association, respectful, beneficial, empowering. May beings not experience the misery of lower realms, and may they never know any hardships. With a physical form superior to the gods, may they swiftly attain Buddhahood. Hello and welcome once more to the program. I open today with a verse from Shantideva's A Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life, we ended our last program with. It seems appropriate, not only because last time we said we would discuss the verse a little further, but also because it's a good verse to consider for motivation. For those new to the program, we always take a moment at the beginning to stop and think why we are participating in this half hour of Buddhist discussion. Why? Because the motivation for any action defines whether the action is positive and beneficial or not. If we have an unselfish motivation, even an action appearing to be harsh will bring a good result, whereas the most positive appearing action motivated only by self-interest will in the end have a bad outcome. So, if we contemplate and meditate on the Dharma, for instance, only so that others will think we are religious, saintly people and give us many offerings, the result will be poverty and misery in the future. But if we go through many hardships, like keeping the vow of eating only one meal a day, with a thought to attain enlightenment to free all beings from suffering, the result will be Buddhahood. So let's contemplate this verse in setting our motivation for the program today. Through our participating here, may all beings not experience the misery of the lower realms. May they never know any hardships, and with a body better than even the gods, may they quickly get to Buddhahood. Let's try to set such a motivation. Thank you. Now, with that verse, we ended last week's program with Kunzen Peldon's commentary, which goes like this. May those who have poor discipline, and indeed anyone else, never have to suffer the three lower realms in their lives to come. And without great toil and difficulty, may they attain a human existence endowed with freedoms and advantages, which from the point of view of liberation is far better than a divine existence, and quickly attain perfect Buddhahood. Of course, it's very difficult, if we have poor discipline, to avoid hardships, and the worse our discipline, the closer we are to the lower realms, that is, existence amongst animals, hungry ghosts, or the hell beings. The physical form superior to the gods refers, of course, to our human existence, because it's taught that though the gods have hardly any suffering and unbelievable pleasures, they're so entranced by their delightful lives that they're not inclined to practice the Dharma even if they know about it. However, we humans have enough suffering intermingled with pleasure that we can develop a heartfelt wish to be completely free of it. And so we are much more inclined to practice the Buddha's teachings and become enlightened. Naturally, those in the lower realms have far too much ignorance and suffering to think very much further than the present moment, so they don't have much interest in practicing the Dharma either. I may preach and explain the Buddha's words for hours to our temple cat, but she will understand nothing. She'll just get irritated and yowl for more food. We humans are generally more intelligent than that, although many of us are about as inclined to practice the Dharma as the dear temple pussycat. Nevertheless, we have the capability, and if we have the 8 freedoms and 10 advantages, we certainly have the opportunity. Now, we've been through the freedoms and advantages in a previous program. For those who are not with us, or for those who don't know, they define a life best able to practice the teachings. Such a life is called in Tibetan Buddhism a precious human rebirth. Although any human rebirth is valuable because of its potential, only lives with the freedoms and advantages have the fullest opportunity to realize that potential, and such lives are thus called precious human rebirths. There are 8 freedoms, and they are freedom from being born as a hell being, a hungry ghost, an animal, or is a long-lived god? Those are the first four. As we've said before, the first three kinds of existence are too full of ignorance and suffering to be able to properly practice the Dharma, and long-lived gods are much too involved with their pleasures. Then the other four freedoms are freedom from holding wrong views, from being born in a place where there are no Buddhist teachings, from being born where no Buddha has appeared, and being born with bad mental or physical faculties. For instance, being dumb, deaf, blind, or mentally impaired. You can see that taking life in any of those states will severely impair our ability to work towards enlightenment. Then the 10 advantages are, number one, being born human. Number two, in a land where the teachings are established. Number three, having all your faculties. And number four, having faith in the Dharma. And five, not having committed the five heinous acts of killing your mother, your father, or an arhat, creating a schism in the Sangha, or wounding a Buddha. Now those are the first five. And then the other are, number six, that a Buddha has come. Number seven, he is taught. Number eight, his teachings remain. And nine, the teachings are followed. And 10, there are benefactors who will help practitioners. For instance, people who want to go on retreat. Now, if we have these 18 conditions, it's possible for us to practice the teachings well and gain realizations. Otherwise, it's very difficult. So this is why Kunzen Peldon wishes beings to be born with these 18. Now, if you have such a precious human rebirth, His Holiness the Dalai Lama recommends that every morning when you wake up, you say to yourself, "Today I'm fortunate to have woken up. I'm alive, I have a precious human life, and I'm not going to waste it. I'm going to use all my energies to develop myself, to expand my heart out to others, to achieve enlightenment for the benefit of all beings. I'm going to have kind thoughts towards others. I'm not going to get angry or think badly about others. I'm going to benefit others as much as I can." In his book, The Path to Enlightenment, His Holiness goes even further and writes, "In order to develop a fully qualified desire to take advantage of a life of leisure, you must reflect on its four elements as follows. Firstly, the need to practice the teachings, because all living beings only want happiness and do not want suffering, and because achieving happiness and alleviating suffering depend only on practicing the teachings. Number two, the ability to practice, because you are endowed with the external condition of teacher and the internal conditions, leisure and opportunity or advantages. And then the third one, the need to practice in this lifetime, because if you do not practice, it will be very difficult to obtain leisure and opportunity again for many lifetimes. And number four, the need to practice right now, because there's no certainty when you will die. Among these, the third stops the laziness of giving up, which thinks, I will practice the teaching in future lives. The fourth stops the laziness of disengagement, which thinks, although I should practice in this lifetime, it's enough to practice later on, and not to practice in my early years, months, and days. His Holiness goes on, the ordinary samsaric mind sees the human body as just a tool with which to chase material, social, and biological needs, all of which satisfy only superficial levels of the spirit. Their effects do not pass beyond the gates of death. We have to learn to appreciate the intrinsic spiritual quality of human nature, to have a subtle confidence in the positive creative aspect of our being. It's difficult to enter spiritual training if one regards one's life as having no purpose other than the pursuit of ephemeral transient goals, as does a rat who builds a strong nest and then drags home all sorts of trinkets to it. In order to break the mind of this vain, mundane attitude towards life, we sit in meditation and contemplate first the 8 freedoms and the 10 endowments, which Kunzen Peldon calls advantages, and then the meaningful and rare nature of a human incarnation. This contemplation imbues us with a sense of spiritual dignity that subtly transforms our way of relating to ourselves and our existence. We cease to see ourselves merely as animals, uncontrolledly chasing after the immediate cravings of the senses in a vicious circle of jungle law. And we come to appreciate the quality of penetrating awareness and the capacity for spiritual development that distinguishes humans from animals and insects. This causes the thought of extracting the essence of life to arise with a joyous intensity. That's His Holiness the Dalai Lama. And Sogyal Rinpoche, the author of the best-selling book, The Tibetan Book of Living and Dying, says something similar. Every spiritual tradition has stressed that this human life is unique and has a potential that ordinarily we don't even begin to imagine. If we miss the opportunity this life offers us for transforming ourselves, they say, it may well be an extremely long time before we have another. Imagine a blind turtle roaming the depths of an ocean the size of the universe. Up above floats a wooden ring, tossed to and fro on the waves. Every 100 years, the turtle comes once to the surface. To be born a human being is said by Buddhists to be more difficult than for that turtle to surface accidentally with its head poking through the wooden ring. And even among those who have a human birth, it is said, those who have the great good fortune to make a connection with the teachings are rare. And those who really take them to heart and embody them in their actions even rarer. As rare, in fact, as stars in broad daylight. The quality of life in the realm of the gods may look superior to our own, yet the masters tell us that human life is infinitely more valuable. Why? Because of the very fact that we have the awareness and intelligence that are the raw materials for enlightenment, and because the very suffering that pervades this human realm is itself the spur to spiritual transformation. Pain, grief, loss, and ceaseless frustration of every kind are there for a very real and dramatic purpose. To wake us up, to enable, almost to force us, to break out of the cycle of samsara and so release our imprisoned splendor. That's Sogyal Rinpoche. In the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, one of the very first meditations on the path to enlightenment is on precious human rebirth. So it may seem a bit strange that as we are coming to the end of one of the most comprehensive Mahayana texts, we go right back to considering the beginning again. However, it's also good to remind ourselves that what Shantideva taught was not just for highly realized people with many qualities. Ordinary folk, like myself, can also find much to contemplate and internalize if we realize the potential we've been born into. We can, in due course, become arhats, bodhisattvas, or even Buddhas if we use our time wisely. We're encouraged to contemplate again and again precious human rebirth, coupled with impermanence and death, to keep ourselves motivated and practicing. So even as we're going through the last few verses of Shantideva's text, we can keep in mind the importance of this rebirth and how fragile it really is. But now let's continue with Shantideva's verses. He writes, "May sentient beings again and again make offerings to all the Buddhas, and may they constantly be joyful with the inconceivable bliss of the Buddhas. Just as they have intended, may the bodhisattvas fulfill the welfare of the world, and may all sentient beings receive whatever the Buddhas have intended for them. Similarly, may the Pratyekya Buddhas and the Shivakas find happiness." Kunzen Belden points out that these are verses specifically dedicated to beings attaining the supreme goal of liberation and enlightenment. He paraphrases the first verse like this: "May beings as numerous as the sky is vast at all times make offerings, both of material things and of their practice, to the Buddhas in the 10 directions. And thanks to the Buddha's blessings, may they attain the inconceivable, endless bliss of the stainless enlightened mind and be forever filled with great happiness." It might be good at this point, seeing as Shantideva mentions making offerings, to remind ourselves of what the offerings are and the meaning given to them. Now, if you go into a Tibetan temple, you will very often see a number of bowls containing water on the altar. Some altars have many bowls, but there should be at least 7. The bowls symbolize the offerings made in ancient India by wealthy people when honored guests came to visit. Namely, water for drinking and washing the face, water for washing the feet, flowers, incense, lights, perfumes, food, and music. That makes 8 offerings, but sometimes the 2 waters are combined in 1 bowl to make 7. Over time, offering these substances in a Buddhist temple has taken on extra meaning, apart from just showing respect and devotion. Though different traditions have given different meanings to the offerings. In the Tibetan tradition, Kempo Konchog Gyaltsen Rinpoche describes the meaning and symbolization of the offerings like this. Enlightenment, Buddhahood, is achieved through the 2 great qualities, accumulation and purification, he says. As you know, the Buddha has limitless qualities, which were gained through the great accumulations and purifications. Our offerings are a simple way to accumulate both wisdom and merit. Water for drinking and washing the face, Rinpoche says, represents auspiciousness, or all the positive qualities and conditions which bring positive effects. He goes on, so make an offering of water which is clean, fresh, cool, smooth, light, delicious, comfortable to the throat and stomach. These qualities are the qualities of auspiciousness. When you drink that kind of water, it is healthy. If you take a shower with it, it is healthy. While you make this kind of water offering to the enlightened beings, visualize an ocean of water. Then we dedicate this water to become a cause for all sentient beings to also collect positive causes and conditions. Then water to wash the feet, Rinpoche describes as clear water mixed with incense or sandalwood, which is made as an offering to all enlightened beings' feet. The symbolic meaning is purification. By cleansing the feet of the enlightened beings, we cleanse all our own negative karma and obscurations. By making offerings to clean the enlightened beings' feet, we are really cleaning the feet of our own mind. With respect, devotion, and confidence, we offer an ocean of this kind of water to all enlightened beings to purify all the temporary obscurations of ourselves and all sentient beings. Obscurations are called temporary because they can be purified. If they were permanent, we could not purify them even if we make an effort. So, meditate on this when you make these offerings. All the different types of obscurations, gross, subtle, negative karma, afflictive emotions, and obscurations to enlightenment, all these different types of obscurations become fully purified. Then he describes the offering of flowers. In some traditions, flowers represent impermanence, but Rinpoche here says, this next is offering of the flower of the beauty of enlightenment. It signifies the practice of generosity and opens the heart. A flower is very beautiful, so you naturally want to keep it. But when you offer it to others, there's some special feeling in the mind. With that connection, make the offering and practice freedom from stinginess. Milarepa said, there's no special practice of generosity if one is free from stinginess. Meditate on that by offering flowers, which signifies the practice of generosity. May all sentient beings achieve the freedom and endowment of a precious human life. Flowers are offered to the head of the enlightened beings for them to wear on the crown of the head. With the practice of generosity, we immediately think of giving wealth, giving fearlessness, giving wisdom. There are many types of generosity. Usually when we say generosity, we immediately think of giving wealth, but it's not only that. For example, giving fearlessness means giving life. If someone is afraid for their life, like drowning in water, and if you give them safety from the water, this is called giving fearlessness, giving freedom from danger to life. Giving wisdom is very special generosity. When we give teaching to one who has no wisdom, does not know what samsara is, what enlightenment is, or what the cause of suffering is, that is such a great gift. To help them understand, oh, that is samsara, and that's enlightenment. Such a great gift. So offering a flower symbolizes generosity. The next offering is incense, which represents moral discipline. Moral discipline is one of the most important practices, says Rinpoche. In the West, maybe discipline and morality are a little bit different. What I mean here is that when we have good discipline, there is morality. Discipline is in the teaching of the Dharma. For instance, it says, do this, 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 sit like this, meditate like this. It is taught like discipline. So when we do that, it is good moral ethics. When we cannot do these things that are taught to be done, then there's no morality, no ethics. In Sanskrit, this is called shila, means coolness, freshness. When we have good discipline, it cools the mind, free from suffering. When we stay in that position well, it relaxes the mind and frees it from agitation. All these disciplines are part of the process of progressing in our meditation practice. Unless these disciplines and moral ethics are there, it's not possible to achieve enlightenment. Rinpoche goes on to say that the three trainings in Buddhism, that's moral ethics, concentration, and wisdom, are interrelated. Wisdom's only attained through concentration or samadhi, and samadhi is only attained through strong moral ethics. He calls incense the nature of morality, and although we offer it to the nose of the enlightened beings, they are not attached to the smell, but to our purity. All people respect those who have kept moral ethics well, says Rinpoche. It doesn't matter who they are, they get respect because they are trustworthy and dependable. That kind of person gives a good smell, odor, and people are attracted to that. Not only people, but the qualities of enlightened beings are also attracted by that morality. It is their foundation, basis, like the ground which grows the crops of enlightened qualities. Then he says that light, the next offering, signifies the stability and clarity of patience, which he describes as the beauty which dispels all ignorance. Now, those of you who've been with us throughout all the previous programs will remember that Shantideva devotes a whole chapter to the practice of patience. So maybe we can remember that, as Rinpoche says, the light offering is made to the eyes of all the enlightened beings who clearly see without mistake. Some people feel patience is showing weakness or pessimism, but actually patience shows the strength and clarity of mind, which are based on wisdom and compassion. Without proper wisdom and compassion, one cannot practice patience. So light shows that strength of the mind, the clear, stable nature of the mind, achieved through the practice of patience. Because the mind is not disturbed by other forces, it has such great qualities. Clarity knows what is to be done, which is necessary and which is not necessary. That dispels ignorance. Patience, Rinpoche says, can be practiced in many different ways, not only when facing someone who's angry with us. He uses as an example patience in Dharma practice and study. We need wisdom to really know what Dharma is, its depth and vastness, and how we can achieve its qualities. Then we need patience to study and practice, and through that we will attain a mind of clarity and stability. Shantideva, you may recall, addresses three types of patience: the patience of accepting suffering, the patience of dealing with antagonists, and the patience of practicing the Dharma, which Rinpoche has mentioned above. Then the next offering is of perfume or fragrance. This signifies perseverance or joyous effort. Rinpoche says, through that one quality, one develops all the qualities of enlightenment. Without perseverance, without joyous effort, nothing can be achieved. Even in samsara, we have to work so hard to achieve anything. A lot of people sacrifice a lot of things just for samsaric achievement. You sacrifice your life for your work. If you die, what will you do with your wealth? So now we see the other side, Dharma practice and study. When we could make such a great effort to study, practice the Dharma, we have to sacrifice some little thing. It is said in Shantideva's text that studying Dharma is a cause for freedom from suffering. To achieve ultimate enlightenment, ultimate happiness, why can't we do that? Others in samsara even sacrifice their life for their achievements, but that becomes a cause only for suffering. As flowers were offered to the eyes of enlightenment, perfumes are offered to the Buddha's mind, because perseverance is the heart of enlightenment. Perfect generosity, moral ethics, patience, samadhi, wisdom, these all depend on perseverance. Without joyous effort, none of these can be accomplished. So it is the heart, the essence. Meditate that by this offering may all sentient beings progress in their attainment of the qualities of enlightenment. Then we come to the offering of delicious food with a variety of tastes. The delicious, excellent quality of food signifies nectar or ambrosia to feed the mind, says Rinpoche. This is an offering to the tongue of the enlightened beings, the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. And then he links food to samadhi or concentration. He says, the very stable mind, one-pointed, clear, calm, peaceful mind of samadhi, becomes a basis to achieve all the enlightenment qualities. Food symbolizes samadhi, because eating food maintains this body. And samadhi is a kind of food that maintains the mind, as well as the physical body. When you achieve any kind of samadhi, it is the fruition of the effort you've made before, and it can also become a path to get higher fruition. Generally, when we eat nutritious, healthy food, it makes our health better. The nutritious food of samadhi, it keeps the health of the mind. It makes the mind healthy, clear, calm, and peaceful. By making this offering of delicious food, may all sentient beings have the health that results from the samadhi food. May all sentient beings have the samadhi nature quality. The eighth and last offering is music, which represents wisdom. There are different types of instruments, cymbals, bells, guitars, lutes, all of these are offered, says Rinpoche. Their nature is wisdom, which makes an offering to the ears of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas and all the enlightened beings. Sound represents wisdom, because wisdom is a special power of the mind which penetrates phenomena. Compassion is achieved through great wisdom. Interdependence of all phenomena is realized through great wisdom. Of course, all phenomena have the nature of interdependence, causes and conditions, but sound is specially easy to understand. If you play a guitar, what does the sound depend on? It does not just come from the piece of wood, the string, not from the finger. So where does it come from? It comes from all these things. None alone is sufficient to produce the sound. That nature is called illusion. We can hear the sound, but it has no independent existence. So we should all see all sound as having that nature. It just comes and goes like an echo. That realization is wisdom, and through that realization, we can attain supramundane quality. So these are the principal offerings, but really, we can offer anything that is valuable or pleases us. The most important offering is that of practice. When we've listened to the teachings and contemplated on their validity, we have to then practice them to make our minds so familiar that they become like our second skin. And that is really the value of the Buddha's teachings. For we might make many offerings on the altar hoping for good qualities and resources, but if we don't practice the teachings, it's unlikely that the altar offerings will have all that much effect. The Buddha never taught because he wanted us to offer things to him. He only taught so that beings like ourselves become liberated from all our suffering. Therefore, the most pleasing offering we can make to any Buddha is our practice. In fact, Rinpoche says that the external offering should be seen in the nature of our good qualities in practice, although they appear as water, flowers, and so on. And he says, our motive for making offerings, whether they are just simple bowls of water or elaborate and expensive things, must be pure. No matter what, you have to have a pure motive, he says. This is very important. With pure motivation, any offering you make is good. Expensive is great because you sacrifice a lot of things for that offering. But if you do not have pure motivation, like doing it to show wealth, then maybe it's not so pure. And this, I think, is very important when we think about Shantideva's verse. May sentient beings again and again make offerings to all the Buddhas, and may they constantly be joyful with the inconceivable bliss of the Buddhas. That bliss can only come if our motivation and dedication are pure. So now, as the program comes to an end, let's purely dedicate any positive potential from our discussion today to gaining enlightenment for the benefit of all beings everywhere. Thank you for joining us today, and I hope you'll do so again next week. May all the Buddha's blessings go with you. Goodbye. This show is brought to you by the Buddhist Youth Association every Sunday, bringing Buddhism to the community of the Waikato. We also give away a range of free English or Chinese Buddhism books, MP3, or tapes on Buddhism. If you'd like one, please send a letter with $3 worth of stamps in an envelope to P.O. Box 82146, Highland Park, Howick, Auckland. Or you can phone 09271 3377. Buddhist Youth Association, respectful, beneficial, empowering.